I think our nation was turned on its head for 3 years based on a completely bogus narrative that was largely hyped by an irresponsible press.
Indeed it was. The press has been and is still irresponsible. Chasing wild rumors, hoping to find something to damage the president they couldn't predict would be elected. They got it wrong in 2016, and they've been trying to recover ever since. Hi there. Welcome into this Tuesday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. Hoping that you and yours are doing well whenever and wherever you may be listening. The sound you're listening to is over 110,000 people cheering your president, Donald Trump, as he entered the stage in the world's largest soccer venue in India yesterday. Over 110,000 people cheering. A sea of white with hats praising President Trump. They're all wearing ball caps, white ball caps, praising President Trump. The name of the event, it says Namaste Trump on the caps. 110,000 people. Remember this event when the press, this negligent, irresponsible press, tries to tell you that on the international level, Trump is embarrassing the United States of America. Because that also is a lie. From the Associated Press, prioritizing pageantry over policy, President Donald Trump basked in India's welcoming embrace on a day that featured a mega rally with cheering crowds, a mutual admiration show with his counterpart, and a sunset tour of the famed Taj Mahal. Trump used day one of his whirlwind 36-hour visit to India to reaffirm close ties with the Prime Minister and tease progress on a trade deal down the road. But he said the day was largely devoted to a trio of enviable photo ops. Of course, this is what the AP would call them, photo ops. The largest rally of Trump's presidency, sandwiched between visits to a former home of independence leader Mohandas Gandhi and the Taj Mahal. In his first hours on the subcontinent, Trump received the adulatory reception that has eluded him on many foreign trips. More than 100,000 people packed the world's largest cricket stadium, nearly all of them wearing white caps with the name of the event, Namaste Trump. But miles away in the capital of New Delhi, police used tear gas and smoke grenades to disperse a crowd of clashing protesters hours before Trump was due to arrive, as violence broke out over a new citizenship law that excludes Muslims. Anti-Trump street demonstrations also erupt in Kolkata, Hyderabad, and Guwahati. Of course, the AP would have to change the focus to the negative. It was so far has been a very positive trip. So far, the Trumps are enjoying the adoration of the people of India. And the people on the fringes, aren't happy. The people on the fringes are upset and angry, as they always are, about something, just like they are here in the United States of America. The people on the fringes are perpetually offended. They have to be offended about something. I don't know if you've noticed that, but that seems to be the way things roll here in America. We have a group of people on the fringe who claim to represent a majority. This is the way this has always happened throughout history. A small number of people, vocal, active, angry, claim to represent a majority. And they push hard until they get what they want. And on top of being vocal and active, they're intolerant of anything that goes against the grain of what they want to happen. You've noticed that here. They don't tolerate anything which doesn't completely embrace their narrative, their plans, their view for the future. We're seeing that happen with Bernie and the Bernie Bros. And we'll get into that in a little while. In fact, most of what we'll be talking about today will be Bernie and the Bernie Bros and what Bernie Sanders really embraces, as opposed to what his words say. But that is to come. India and that reception shows you that the press is lying to us about our president. He is not an embarrassment to us. In fact, because he speaks frankly and doesn't couch everything in political terms, being careful not to offend anyone, he doesn't care who he offends when he's telling the truth. People recognize that genuineness. They appreciate that level of honesty. And because he is being honest with people, his opposition, his opponents, insist that he is lying. And they have been ticking off, fraudulently, I might add, his lies. Yeah, he may embellish the truth from time to time. He may step out, but in the bigger picture, he's doing so much good for us that his showmanship is just something that can be actually written off. But in India, the real story is being told. 110,000, actually more than 110,000 people, packed in the world's largest cricket stadium to see President Trump and his wife. What a day. And the AP writes it off as a photo op. The Associated Press is just one more example of the bias on the left. The AP is anti-Trump. It is comprised of people, by and large, the vast majority of them, who are progressives, who will never acknowledge the truth about what's happening in our country and around the world as a result of a real leader being elected as president, not another politician. Is he perfect? No. None of them have been, and none of them will be. But he's doing things he promised he would do, and the changes have been remarkable. People are better off, and they recognize it. And when the leftists in the media and in politics try to condemn him for what he's done, people who actually have looked at what he's done and understand what's going on, those people, they nod their heads and they say, yep, things are better. Everybody seems to be happier. Everybody from business owners down to independent people doing side jobs like Uber drivers will tell you their business has never been better. People feel freer. People are happier. People are more confident. Except for that little clutch of people over on the left, the progressives, who are perpetually PO'd about something. They can never, ever be happy or satisfied, because there's got to be some oppressed group that they can campaign for. And when they see something like what happened in India, they will lie about it to themselves and to everyone else, because they can't allow themselves to believe something so positive has actually happened in association with our president. And what a shame that is. Because things are good here in the United States. And if you don't think so, I encourage you to leave just for a few days and go look elsewhere. You don't have to go far. I've told you this many times. Just take a cruise in the Caribbean. And instead of going on one of the paid tours, just walk. Walk a couple of blocks beyond the shopping area at the port, and you'll see what I'm talking about. And if you do go on one of the paid tours, pay very close attention to what they rush you past, because you will see poverty, you will see shacks, you will see garbage, you will see what looks like liberal cities in America. Things crumbling and falling apart. People living in squalor. But in the approved tourist areas, everything looks dandy. Cuba's a good example. 90 miles off of the southern tip of Florida. Cuba's a great example. The tourist areas are all well kept. They look great. You venture beyond the tourism areas and you see the buildings that are crumbling and falling apart with no windows, the roofs caving in, and people's laundry hanging from the windows because people are still living in those buildings. You see cars parked everywhere because there's no gas. And the few you do see driving around have managed to find it when the advantage was there, and they took advantage of it. The opportunity, I should say, and they took advantage of it. Life in Cuba is bad. Except when you're a tourist or a celebrity. And then they show you their shining examples of education and healthcare, which aren't available to the general public. But they don't tell you that. So, in other places around the world, they're scrambling to leave and come here. But you don't see people scrambling, packing, and fleeing here to go to those places. Even though Hollywood stars, leftists of high prominence will tell you if certain people are elected, they're leaving the country. They're lying because they never would, because they have the money to travel, and they've been to other countries. And they know, as much as they disagree with right-thinking America, it's still better here than it is anywhere else. And I mean anywhere else. And if you don't think so, just watch a few travel videos. Spend some time on YouTube. Lately, I've been on a binge watching tourism and travel tip sorts of video for Japan. Tokyo is a place I'd like to visit someday. I really would like to visit Japan. It's a beautiful country. And the people all seem to be, from what I can see, the people seem to be wonderful people. And they embrace tourism. And the people of Japan, contrary to what the progressives would have you believe, don't have a problem at all with cultural appropriation. If you would like to dress Japanese and to eat Japanese and to live Japanese, they love you for it. But don't think you're going to become a citizen there, because they're very protective of their culture on the inside. They don't allow certain things to happen in their country. And as a result, their country is relatively crime-free, but progressives would tell you that's intolerant. Yeah, we should be intolerant of certain things in order to protect our people. But progressives don't understand that and refuse to. But back to Japan. What I've been watching, I've been seeing that life is extremely complicated in Japan. That to get a bank account, it's kind of complicated, especially if you're there and you're not a citizen. To rent an apartment is a challenge. They're expensive and they're tiny, unless you move out into the countryside, outside of major cities. Little things like garbage disposal are complex, and a lot of burden and responsibility is put on the people. You see, here in America, if you decide you want to recycle, that's your choice. You can set up your little bins and you can play along with the game, which actually costs a lot more and and isn't nearly as beneficial as they would have you believe. But in Japan, you don't have a choice. You're going to recycle. You're going to separate your plastics. You're going to wash out those meat trays that contain the chicken and the beef that you got from the store. And you're going to put them in the proper disposal places. You're going to separate the paper out. You're going to separate the plastic. You're going to separate the metal. And you're going to have to take them to different places to have them dealt with. And that's just one example. And here in the United States, it's not that complex. And that's just one country. Look at some more and you'll see it really is better here. Even in the places that Bernie and his bros say are ideal. Oh my. They're lying to you, my friend. We live in the best country in the world. It's the United States of America. And people are swimming to get here. People are waking up. Good to see, too. It is the Tuesday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Hi there, Mark Congleton here. You are there. Kimber, the Wonder Dog, is asleep in her chair over there. I'm driving the bus. And as far as I can tell, everything's running smoothly today. And that's good news. Yesterday was basically a nothing day for me. I really don't have anything to talk about. That's why I didn't talk about personal stuff off the top. And I usually do. I usually have something to talk about. Yesterday, not really. I've been just a little bit under the weather lately. There's been something going around, and I've got a little piece of it. Excuse me, which is why I keep clearing my throat. And yesterday, it started during the podcast yesterday. I started getting dizzy, and I don't know. I haven't listened back to the podcast from yesterday, and I always listen. I listen to every one of them, and I critique everything about it, and I think, I got to stop doing that. And then I don't. But I was dizzy and kind of out of sorts, and when I got through, I went on with my schedule of things to get done yesterday, and exercises and the like, you know, just TCB, taking care of business. And at one point I finally had to stop because I was just wiped out, dizzy, not feeling good, horrible. I grabbed a bite of lunch and just kind of crashed. And I'm still feeling a little of it today, and I don't know what it is. I hope it's nothing. I know it's no, it's not coronavirus. Don't be silly. I don't go anywhere to be exposed to anybody. Trust me. I work out of a studio. I go every now and then out places, and the places I go, trust me, the people I run into, they ain't been to Wuhan, China. Oh, but here's to hoping everything is a bit better today. I have some things to get out for today. And I'm looking forward to that. I really am looking forward to that. It is, it's a Tuesday edition of the podcast today. I hate to break it to you, but it's going to be Bernie. We just got to talk about Bernie Sanders today, because Bernie claims to be something he is not. Bernie Sanders claims to be a democratic socialist. And that is the line that his talking heads that he dispatches to speak for him in various press scenarios, that's what they stick to. No, he's a democratic socialist. I actually saw this happen. What was it? It was on the Laura Ingraham show the other night. There were two people. There was a Democrat strategist, a Republican strategist. And when the Democrat said, well, he is a, you know, let's differentiate. He is a democratic socialist. And the Republican strategist just about lost her cookies. She was laughing. Yeah, right. Because nobody with a brain believes that he is socialist light. Because anybody with the brain knows that that's how socialism takes over. It portrays itself as something it is not. And the people think, oh, well, that's different. That's not bad. And they latch on to it and agree with it and push what they've been promised, but they don't understand that the promise is a lie. And that eventually It may take 10 years, may take 20 years, it may take 30 or 40 years, but eventually the shortcomings of socialism always choke a society off. If you got yesterday's show notes and you actually read the stories that I told you to read that I had linked, I put them at the bottom of the show notes. There's two stories about socialism. One of them outlined three nations which had at one time embraced socialism and then abandoned it in order to survive. Those three nations, India, Great Britain. What was the third one? I just lost the third. It just went poof out of my head. Three nations, Israel. It was Israel. Israel, India, and Great Britain. At different times in history, they each embraced socialism and decided that was the way they needed to go. And it worked for a little while. And eventually, socialism can't compete. It can't keep up with the world around it. And eventually, socialism breeds incredible corruption. Incredible corruption. And the people at the top are filthy rich. And the people in the public who voted for it and said it was a great way to go are all suffering. The markets start imploding. Everything goes wrong. Eventually. But the socialists keep pushing. And they keep saying, one of the things they say is the reason you can't point to any successes of socialism is because it's never been done. What? No. What they mean to say is it's been done wrong. The wrong people, the wrong execution, wrong, wrong, wrong. Well, those three nations that I just named off, those three countries, those were the good examples. Those were the successful examples of socialism. Great Britain, Israel, India. They all had remarkable success at the beginning. And then eventually it began falling apart because socialism is a dead end. It can't live for long. Those were the positive examples. If anyone was doing it right, it was those three countries. And eventually they said, "Ooh, no more of this. We're suffering too much. We have to change things." In some cases, they were forced into it. If you want to move forward, we have to change everything. And they fought it. Until finally, there was enough push to where they changed. And when they changed, within just a matter of a couple of years, things began turning around. And people were breathing easier and things got better. Read those articles that I put in the show notes yesterday. That's why I published the show notes. The stuff's necessary. Well, crazy Bernie, Senate Socialist Bernie Sanders, he's the current leader in the race for the Democratic nomination for president, doubled down on his praise for murderous communist dictator Fidel Castro last night. Went on to praise communist China. CNN's Chris Cuomo was questioning Sanders during a town hall event and said, "I'll take one more step down the road from the stigma from some of your fellow Democrats. You said on 60 Minutes this weekend, it's unfair to say everything is bad with the way Fidel Castro ruled in Cuba. Now, Democratic members of Congress who represent Cuban Americans in Florida, obviously you've got to win there, they're attacking your comment as absolutely unacceptable, singing the praises of a murderous tyrant. Response?" And Sanders falsely claimed, "The response was, when Fidel Castro first came to power, he initiated a major literacy program. There was a lot of folks in Cuba at that point who were illiterate. He formed a literacy brigade. They went out and helped people learn to read and write. You know what? I think teaching people to read and write is a good thing." Let's break from the article for just a minute here. Everything he has just said is a lie. Everything. Because the people of Cuba were just as literate as practically every other nation that ranked along with them in Central America at the time. Most of the people, most of the people, the vast majority, better than 90%, were literate. And what Castro did was set up indoctrination programs, not literacy programs. They went out and taught children the Communist Manifesto. And that was their literacy program. That's what Sanders is calling a literacy program. It was an indoctrination program. Back to the article. Sanders then praised Communist China, which murdered 45 million of its own people to implement communism, and which currently has 1 million people in concentration camps. I don't know if you're aware of that, but there are 1 million Uyghur Muslims in concentration camps in mainland China. Sanders said, China is an authoritarian country becoming more and more authoritarian. But can anyone deny, I mean the facts are clear, that they have taken more people out of extreme poverty than any country in history? Do I get criticized because I say this? It's the truth. So that's the fact. End of discussion. Cuomo pointed out that Castro was a murderer, to which Sanders again doubled down on his praise of the communist dictator. He said, truth is truth. Bernie Sanders is a bald-faced liar. And I've said this before, and I don't apologize for it. He's not just a democratic socialist. He's not just a socialist. Bernie Sanders is a communist. And Bernie Sanders is lying to the people of America about things that are very easily researched and disproven. Bernie Sanders should be nowhere near the White House. That's Mark. Hi there. Mark Congleton here. It's the Daily Perspective. It's the Tuesday edition. Good to have you along. Ah, man. You know, usually during the breaks, I scan social media, just kind of skimming along. I've been looking for a particular thing, and I've been looking for a case for some equipment I have, and I have, this is weird, I actually have a couple of cases like what I need, but they're the wrong size. One of them's way too big for the task at hand, and the other one is too small. So what I've been doing, I've been shopping for secondhand Pelican cases and the like to house some video gear. And the so I thought, why not look over on Facebook Marketplace? I never cease to be amazed by what you can find on Facebook Marketplace. It just blows my mind. Because you want to talk about absurd? This is absurd. Okay. Firewood, I get. Okay, I understand that. Pine straw, I get. I understand. Giant bur oak acorns. Who knew that was a thing? I plead ignorant. The one that kills me right now is shoe. Singular, shoe. $15. Single shoe, $15. It has a Vibram sole, so apparently it's a nice boot, but it's a shoe for $15. I guess if you just need one shoe. Oh, mercy. I'm sorry. Sometimes the stuff just tickles me. And little stuff. And some days, I will find myself spending an incredible amount of time just scrolling through Facebook Marketplace, chuckling at what I find, because there are some bizarre things that people sell. Now, don't get me wrong. There's some very cool things that people sell, but now and then you just run across shoe. Like one day I ran across rock. It was just a rock, a rock. Somebody had a rock for sale, and he was just labeled that rock. Oh, man. God bless us. We're such weird people. We really are sometimes, you know. And all you have to do is just look around to realize that absurdity is everywhere. And people sincerely do things that are absurd and don't even realize how absurd they are. And you just, You just have to laugh at it from time to time. I may buy the shoe just to go next to the rock in the collection. I didn't buy the rock. It is the Tuesday edition of the Daily Perspective, and I hope you're doing well. Back to what we were talking about, Bernie Sanders. The Blaze reported that Sanders was promoting debunked communist propaganda with his misleading claims. They said, while it's true that Castro implemented a reading program on the island after seizing power in a bloody revolution in 1959, Cuba's literacy rate was already high for a Latin American nation at the time, and its education gains have been comparable to those of its peers in the years since. So he had no impact to speak of on literacy rate in Cuba. As attorney Hans Botter noted in an August 2016 article, nearly 8 of 10 Cubans already knew how to read by 1950. This figure was similar, so my figure was a bit inflated. It was 8 out of 10. This figure was similar to that of Costa Rica, which also achieved 100% literacy over the following decades, except Costa Rica and other countries did so without the kind of authoritarian dictatorship that Cubans have endured under the Castro regime for over 61 years. Sanders also falsely claimed that the Democrats who have attacked him over his pro-communist comments are backing other candidates. Reporter Josh Krauschar noted, at a CNN town hall, Bernie Sanders said the Florida Democrat members of Congress criticizing his Castro comments all have endorsed other 2020 candidates. That's false. Representatives Donna Shalala and Debbie Mucarcel Powell have not endorsed anyone in the Dempat primary. Sanders' remarks were widely condemned by Republicans, Democrats, the media, and immigrants who have escaped communist nations. One of those who have been condemning him is a Democrat congresswoman of South American descent. And that's Debbie, mentioned in the article, Debbie Mucarcel Powell. She publicly hit presidential candidate Bernie Sanders over his remarks on murderous Cuban communist dictator Fidel Castro during a Sunday night interview on 60 Minutes. She said, as the first South American immigrant member of Congress who proudly represents thousands of Cuban Americans, I find Senator Bernie Sanders' comments on Castro's Cuba absolutely unacceptable. She said this on Twitter yesterday. The Castro regime, she goes on to say, murdered and jailed dissidents and caused unspeakable harm to too many South Florida families. To this day, it remains an authoritarian regime that oppresses its people, subverts the free press, and stifles a free society. Appearing on a 60 Minutes Sunday night, Sanders defended Castro to Anderson Cooper, emphasizing the dictator's literacy program. We've already talked about that. Cooper, also an anchor at CNN, pressed Sanders, saying a lot of dissidents are imprisoned in Cuba. And Sanders responded, that's right, and we condemn that. Before he shifted gears to hit President Trump, saying, unlike Donald Trump, let's be clear, you want to, I do not think that Kim Jong-un is a good friend, he said. I don't trade love letters with a murdering dictator. Vladimir Putin, not a great friend of mine. You know what's interesting about this, about his statement, his deflection, his pivot here, is that it seems to be common among the Democrats. You know, when you think about the claims that have been made about, you know, people like Maxine Waters, she's always talking about Putin, always talking about Russia, always talking about dictators and the like that Trump, they're accusing him of chumming up with. And Trump has just very clearly said, don't you think it's better for us to be friends with these people than enemies? We don't have to like what they do or endorse what they do. But don't you think we'll achieve more if we're friends or friendly? Which does make perfect sense. He's not embracing their ideology. He's not endorsing their ideology. He's not approving of anything they do. But he's not going into negotiations, walking in the door and screaming at them about being evil people. And in order to free their people, we do actually have to talk to their leaders. Bernie Sanders is short-sighted. Go figure. Sanders, back in 1985, he was serving then as the mayor of Burlington, said he was talking about Daniel Ortega and Castro. He couldn't get enough of Castro. He said, in 1961, America invaded Cuba and everybody was totally convinced that Castro was the worst guy in the world. All the Cuban people were going to rise up in rebellion against Fidel Castro. They forgot that he educated their kids, gave their kids health care, totally transformed society. You know, not to say Fidel Castro and Cuba are perfect. They're certainly not. But just because Ronald Reagan dislikes these people does not mean to say the people in these nations feel the same. Wow. Gee, I guess that explains why so many of them have built boats and escaped in the dark of night, coming to the United States. That explains why so many people have defected and left. And that explains why people are afraid to talk badly about their government, because they know what happens to people who do. Bernie Sanders is a lying communist. Did I say that before? Please keep this in mind. Every time Bernie talks, he's lying to you about something. Why? He's a politician to begin with, and he's a communist on top of that. Cubans will tell you what life was like for them. Cubans who live here now, and they are aghast. They are just absolutely shocked by what Bernie Sanders has had to say. When Sebastian Arcos and family members tried to travel from Cuba to the United States, authorities stopped them in what turned out to be a sting operation to arrest one of his uncles. That uncle had advocated and fought for Fidel Castro's revolution more than 20 years before. That was in December 31st of 1981. And for trying to leave the island nation, Arcos was jailed for a year. His uncle spent 7 years in jail. His father, also a political supporter of the communist revolution and, like many other citizens, soured on the broken promises of democracy, was imprisoned for 6 years. 58-year-old Arcos, he's today an associate director of the Cuban Research Institute at Florida International University, said, for the sake of argument, let's say both the Cuban healthcare system and education system are perfect, which they are not. There have been thousands of political executions, tens of thousands of political prisoners, and 3 million Cuban exiles. So the question to ask when we're told to consider the good things is, what is the price for the good? Arcos said that he's surprised when talking heads in the United States will give Fidel Castro the benefit of the doubt. Senator Bernie Sanders, remember, he's a professed democratic socialist. He's a commie. Defended comments he made in the 80s when he said of Castro, hey, he educated their kids, gave them health care, totally transformed the society. In defending those remarks during that interview aired on CBS 60 Minutes Sunday, he said what I told you before. We're very opposed to the authoritarian nature of Cuba, but you know, it's unfair to simply say everything's bad. You know, when Fidel came into office in 59, he had a massive literacy program. Is that a bad thing, even though Fidel Castro did it? Well, considering what it was, yes, it is. Castro handed control of the government to his brother Raul before his death at age 90 in November of 2016. Miguel Diaz-Canel was named president when the younger Castro stepped down at age 87 in February of 2018, but is largely considered a figurehead. Raul Castro, the head of Cuba's Communist Party, is said to make major government decisions. So he's really still in charge. Sanders noted that President Trump has had kind things to say about Kim Jong-un and Putin. We won't go back into that again. The bottom line is, horrible things happened and are happening in Cuba. And you cannot say anything good about their leaders.
snap.
Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. Oh, man. You know, I've been dumping this song out of the automation for 2 weeks, and it finally got by me. Why is Thriller playing? Anyway, it is the final segment of the Tuesday edition of the Daily Perspective podcast. We were talking about this article, by the way, coming from the Daily Signal. And what people are saying, what people who've actually come out of Cuba are saying, Cuban Americans talking about what life under Castro was really like, as opposed to what Bernie Sanders would have you believe. And we were talking about this. Sebastian Arcos had been talking about what was going on. Sebastian Arcos joined the Cuban Committee for Human Rights back in 1987, providing reports to the UN, the United Nations Human Rights Commission, before coming to the United States in 1992. He said people should know better than to concede gross human rights abuses in Cuba and then point to the health care and literacy. He says that's been the regime's argument for decades. Whoever makes that argument is just repeating their lines. Cuba's military dictatorship controls 80% of the economy. Political prisoners are common. The courts face political interference. The Heritage Foundation's 2019 Index of Economic Freedom ranks Cuba at 178th among the world's nations based on how free its economy is. Cuba did adopt some free market policies about a decade ago, but the government hasn't been making a strong effort to implement the reforms. Private property is allowed, but it is strictly regulated by the government. I've told you the stories before. The reports I've heard about people going on cruises and taking tours and seeing homes with no flowers, no special stuff on the house or on the property, because if everybody can't have the same thing, nobody can. Strictly regulated by the government. According to the Heritage Index, low state-dictated wages increase poverty in Cuba. The state runs the means of production. Property seizures without due process are common. The top income tax rate is 50%. Oddly enough, lower than what Bernie Sanders would have. Repression in Cuba is on the rise. That's according to Janicet Rivero, a human rights activist who lived in Cuba until she was 14. She's 50 now. Her family was wrongly accused of engaging in seditious speech against the Cuban government because they received a letter from a family abroad. She says, health care and education are not as good as the propaganda claims. It's indoctrination more than education. The Cuban system doesn't tolerate critical thinking. The two former Cuban citizens interviewed for this story gave similar accounts of healthcare in Cuba. They said the healthcare system has two tiers, one for its tourists, elites, and the military, which is top rate and what people see. The other is for the general population. When Cubans go to those hospitals, they have to bring their own food, water, bed sheets, and pillows. Of support inside the United States for Cuba's communist system, Rivero said, it's ignorance. Some people are ignorant. However, she suspects that in some cases, it's worse. She says, some people simply support socialism and communism with a big state that can take control of people's lives. Some supporters know exactly what's going on in Cuba and believe it would be okay here because they believe they know best. Frank Calzone, who retired last year as executive director of the Center for a Free Cuba, was born in 1944. His parents sent him to the United States after the Castro-led revolution. He became active in human rights causes and led the center for 22 years. He says, a lot of claims the Cuban government makes should be suspect. Cuban students are not really more educated now. In 1951, the country had 75% to 80% of students who knew how to read and write. A strong spirit exists in Cuba for freedom, he said, pointing to the group Ladies in White as one example. He says the Ladies in White is a group of mothers, wives, sisters, and daughters of political prisoners. They try to march to mass on Sundays, but Cuban police intercept them and take them to prisons. They release them that evening, but they take them several miles out of their city. And that's going on right now. Cuba is not what Bernie Sanders would have you to believe. Socialism is not what Bernie Sanders would have you believe. And also, Bernie Sanders would have you believe that the misbehavior that's going on, the attacks by the Bernie bros, have no connection to him or his campaign. But a new report in the UK's Independent claims that Senator Bernie Sanders is well aware of what his army of online supporters, the so-called Bernie bros, are doing online in his name, and that his senior staff are encouraging, and in some cases even arming, the Bernie bro elite. Sanders came under fire for his supporters' online and increasingly offline behavior ahead of the Nevada caucuses, after his supporters deluged officers of the Nevada Culinary Union, which refused to endorse Sanders. They deluged them with abusive, harassing, even racist phone calls, emails, and social media messages. And after Sanders' delegates disrupted the Nevada Democratic Party's annual convention, throwing objects at speakers and forcing the party to have them physically removed. Former VP Joe Biden, former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg, Senator Elizabeth Warren have all attacked Sanders over Bernie bros' behavior, calling on the candidate to distance himself from the online mobs that rage against the Vermont socialist detractors, and calling on his supporters to eschew violence. Sanders, for his part, has resisted, claiming that he has no knowledge of what the Bernie bros are up to and that he abhors violence. When asked last week if he would disown supporters who engage in violence, Sanders reiterated that he condemns violence by any campaign and cited several instances of violence against his own, including a shooting outside of his Las Vegas, Nevada campaign office, which has yet to be connected to a political motive. So, he's lying. But the Independent reports that not only does Sanders know exactly what the Bernie bros are doing online, some of his senior staff have been instrumental in targeting the Bernie bros' attacks. One Democratic activist claimed Bernie knows exactly what's happening, and his campaign is in the loop about his coordinated viciousness. A Sanders operative refused to corroborate the report, but said that Sanders isn't bothered by more revolutionary behavior. That's been the tone that is set by the campaign leadership, and broadly speaking, I don't think the senator has a problem with that. Indeed, Sanders has used rhetoric about revolutions before, and has notably toned down the use of the word revolution in his own speeches and social media misses in order to suggest distance between himself and violence. But while that change may have come at the behest of his staff, they're also apparently very aware of how well an aggressive online army works. Gun control activist Frank Gutenberg, who's been targeted by both Trump and Sanders supporters, says there are people in this campaign who operate in a very uncivil way. They're relentless. I used to say the Bernie supporters were just like Trump supporters, but I was wrong. They're worse. They're more confrontational, and they're more aggressive. In particular, he said, three of the most frequent ringleaders from whom Sanders' online mobs take their cues are national campaign co-chair and former Ohio State Senator Nina Turner, National Press Secretary Brianna Gray, and speechwriter David Sirota. Sirota is himself a well-known Twitter provocateur. Sanders has deflected criticism over the Bernie bros, occasionally claiming that the online abuse and harassment is the work of Russian bots and not Sanders supporters in the flesh. Oh, so he's blaming it on the Russians, of course. That's the official fallback for anything. Oh, it's the Russians. They're attacking me. It's not me. The Bernie bros are doing what has always been done whenever communism, socialism, progressivism has been making a push wherever it has happened. They're doing what they can to disrupt. They're doing what they can to create as much havoc as possible. They're doing what they can to unsettle people and turn people against one another. they're on the attack because this is how communists operate. Look at the history of every nation that has been turned over, and you will see this very behavior happening in every one of them. Where there has been a, quote, revolution, end quote, and democratic socialism has been introduced, there has always been a group which goes on the attack and just pummels anyone who disagrees, anyone who dissents, anyone who argues against their perfect society. It's happened again and again and again. And it's been encouraged by the party leadership. At least in secret. Condemned in public, but encouraged behind closed doors and through the proper channels to those actually doing the dirty work. So Bernie Sanders is no different than any other leftist leader who has sought a revolution. Even using the word when he speaks and when he writes online, up until lately, because people have finally convinced him. If you're going to convince people you're not going for the revolution, you need to stop using the word. Because what Bernie wants is exactly what Barack Obama laid the groundwork for.
Fundamentally transforming the United States of America.
That's what he's going after. And he, like Obama and his Bernie bros, believe
change will not come if we wait for some other person or if we wait for some other time. We are the ones we've been waiting for.
And that's what they fervently believe. And that's it for today. God bless you. Have a good one. We'll see you back here tomorrow for the next edition of The Daily Perspective. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.